We hear Republicans all the time, and I'm a Republican, talk all the time about defending individual liberty and defending God-given rights. Well, last time I checked, without the right to life, you really can't enjoy much of the others. If we really want to win this, ultimately, we have to do a better job of winning in the culture. Politics is downstream from culture. If you're telling me that we want to move in the same direction, but we want to bring the culture along with us, then let's look at some of these culturally shaping institutions, which are taking a lot of tax dollars and then using those to either indoctrinate our children or perform the very services that we're opposed to. And maybe if we can see some movement in those directions, we'll be able to operate in good faith. But I think that's necessary.
All right, folks, it is Tuesday. We are all past the eclipse. Now, what are we going to talk about? As I told you, save those glasses, though, because you don't ever want to look directly at the Biden record. You need the glasses to protect your eyes and your brain, because looking at the Biden record directly can cause severe damage. Just pro tip on that. So keep those glasses handy if you ever want to look at the Biden record. Anyway, Trump is suing the judge in New York that issued the gag order because they claim that he's attacking his daughter. I'm going to break this down a little bit with Virginia delegate Nick Freitas, who, by the way, if you haven't seen his videos, I'm sure you should and you love him. And then we're going to break down all issues on this Roe versus Wade position that Trump came out. A lot of folks on the right aren't happy. One other quick little political note. Check this thing out. Joe Biden, for all the money they're raising, they may miss the ballot in Ohio. The convention that the Democrats have scheduled is less than 90 days when Ohio requires you to certify your candidate. They're saying, we're going to fix this. Well, Ohio's view is you better move your convention because you're not going to make the statutory deadline to get on the ballot in Ohio. The Biden campaign says nothing to worry about. We're going to have to keep an eye on this, but this would be a major, major flub. Anyway, as I said, Delegate Nick Freitas from Virginia is here. He's got a ton of content that's amazing on Instagram and on YouTube. He's a former Green Beret. We're going to get into it with him. Before I do that, though, I want to tell you about two of the great sponsors right now that keep this show free across all the platforms, by the way, that you should be subscribing to. Let's hear from them, and then we'll get into it with Nick Freitas. Gentlemen, this one's for you. As you get older, and I know this applies to me, have you lost a step? A little less muscle, a little less energy, and a little less testosterone? Well, there's luckily an answer for us. Nugenix Total T has come out with a brand new formula, which includes Tesnor, and that is going to help replace that testosterone. It's a testosterone booster that is going to give us back that spring in our step, that energy, that testosterone that we're lacking as we get older. So if you want right now, text 231-231, use keyword Spicer. Again, keyword Spicer, just text 231 and then 231 again. Enter the word Spicer, hit that, and you're going to get a complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total Tea. It's the greatest thing about this is that it's all scientifically based. Most other products use generic ingredients. This is clinical grade. That's why Nugenix Total Tea is different and why everyone is after it. So get a complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total Tea when you text 231-231, keyword Spicer, and you'll get an extra bottle of Nugenix Thermo X. It's a fat incinerator. So you're getting a great deal here. It's a complimentary bottle of both if you text 231-231, keyword Spicer. Now, texting enrolls you into recurring automated text messages. Consent not required to purchase. Message and data rates may apply. This is the doctor number one recommended brand by primary care physicians based on an independent study conducted by IQVIA 2022. Let me ask you a question. When the power goes out, are you going to be ready? And I'm talking for maybe hours, days, weeks, even months. Are you going to be ready? Check this out. That's me in my kitchen. In my kitchen with my Patriot Power Generator 2000X. You see all the stuff that's plugged in there. If I wanted to, I could show you. It will actually power my refrigerator. That's how powerful this thing is. Now, here's the thing. It's inside, right? No fumes, no noise. You can bring it into your house. You can travel with it. So if you need a friend or a family needs help, you can be the guy that comes to the rescue. It literally powers off solar panel generators that come with it. No gas required. You don't need to keep going and filling it up, keeping it outside, running through messy cords in and out of your doors. No way. The Patriot Power Generator 2000X takes care of all your needs. And again, it comes with the solar power generators that come free with the purchase. So go to 4patriots.com/Spicer, forpatriots.com/Spicer so that you will be prepared in an emergency. And then again, it's not just you. It's about you, your family, your friends, powering that refrigerator, computer, tablet, other things that are critical to you. Go to forpatriots.com/Spicer. Nick, good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing well, Sean. How are you?
Good. I know down in Culpeper, you guys might have had a different view of the eclipse. What did you think?
Not that impressive. I was really expecting the moon god to just completely devour the sun, but it felt like he just take a small bite and then moved right along. So not too impressive.
I felt like it was like, for those who are old enough to remember Y2K, I felt like there was all this like build up, and then I was like, this is it. Like I went outside, I put the glasses on, and I'm like, really? Like that's it? You just look at this little slice and like, I don't know. I expected the whole like neighborhood to get quasi dark. One of my neighbors came out and said, it's only 88%. I'm like, I don't know, 88%. I thought would be pretty dark, but I guess not.
Yeah, no, I kind of felt the same way. I knew we weren't going to get the full
total eclipse. It's like Bonnie Tyler's song.
That's right. So I knew we were going to get that, but I still thought it'd be a little bit more, definitive.
Yeah.
But maybe next time.
I reminded viewers at the beginning of the show, so I'll just spread the word to you as well. Keep the glasses, because if you shouldn't ever look at the Biden record directly head on. It can cause damage to both your eyes and your brain. So don't just throw those glasses out. For the next several months, you should use them to look at that Biden record, because it's so bad for you.
That's true.
Remind your constituents they can do that. Anyway, I wanted to get into it with you. Was it Monday morning? It seems like forever now with all the eclipse talk. President Trump put out on Truth Social his position on abortion. On Roe v. Wade. I'll just play the audience a quick clip of this.
Many people have asked me what my position is on abortion and abortion rights, especially since I was proudly the person responsible for the ending of something that all legal scholars, both sides, wanted and, in fact, demanded be ended. Roe v. Wade. They wanted it ended. It must be remembered that the Democrats are the radical ones on this position because they support abortion up to and even beyond the ninth month. The concept of having an abortion in the later months and even after birth, and that's exactly what it is. The baby is born, the baby is after birth, is unacceptable, and almost everyone agrees with that. My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land. In this case, the law of the state.
All right, you got it there. I'll start with you. What did you think of his answer?
I'm not thrilled. I'm going to be honest.
I like that.
No, I get where he's coming from. I think that there's a lot of people that looked at this as, okay, this is something that the Constitution, I'll put it this way. They've always felt that the Constitution was somewhat silent on this issue, and therefore it should be left up to the states and or the people. And I think Trump wants to take that position. I think he looks at the polling and he believes that abortion is a bad issue for Republicans. And I can understand all of that. The thing that is disappointing to me is that for me, this seems very, very fundamental. I actually think this is something that you could argue on some level should be covered under at least the 14th Amendment and equal protection before the law. But I understand some of the arguments as well that the founding fathers didn't articulate it as such. But ultimately, if we're talking about innocent human life, we hear Republicans all the time, and I'm a Republican, talk all the time about defending individual liberty and defending God-given rights. Well, last time I checked, without the right to life, you really can't enjoy much of the others. So I understand, I guess, why he did it. But ultimately, I think like other issues in the country's past, where for political reasons, we skipped it on by hoping that there would be an easier solution in the future, that we're going to find out that wasn't the case. I will also say this for the pro-life movement, of which I consider myself a very proud member. If we really want to win this, ultimately, we have to do a better job of winning in the culture. Politics is downstream from culture. And I think too many people have bet too much on, well, we're just going to overturn Roe and then we'll pass some laws and that'll be it. The bottom line is if the demand is still there, the supply is going to meet it. And I'm very grateful for organizations like Live Action, like Students for Life, because not only do they obviously try to influence in the political space, but I think they've done an excellent job of also trying to compete in the cultural space. And ultimately, victory on this issue is not just legislative. Victory on this issue is one where we actually have a culture which appreciates and protects all life. And where the idea of destroying innocent human life is something that is seen as reprehensible and unthinkable. So I think we need to make sure that we're fighting on both fronts.
Yeah, totally agree with you. I'm glad you gave a shout out to those groups because they really are out there in the trenches making the case culturally for what has to happen. And I think you're right. If the demand is there, somehow people are going to find the solution, whether it's a pill or whatever. And so we've got to change this so that people respect life more. Here's the issue that I have, just as a pro-lifer, as somebody who, the first thing I would say is the following, and just respond to me, because I feel like for 50 years, and I'm only 52, so it's not like I've been arguing this, but for my adult life, I've been saying Roe was wrongly decided. It conferred a right that doesn't exist. It was a state's issue to begin with. And we in the pro-life movement, we on the right, for the most part, not everybody, but largely said it was wrongly decided. It's a state's issue, send it back. And we got our way, right? And then when we got our way, some said, well, there should be a federal law. And it's like, wait a second, we just argued that they shouldn't have been able to do this. So how do we not look hypocritical as well? And so after arguing for 50 years that it was wrongly decided into a state's issue, shouldn't we maintain that logical conclusion now to say, see, it is a state's rights? Virginia, Arkansas, California, Massachusetts, you guys hash this out.
No, I understand the argument. I do. And that's why I don't think we should be so quick as to throw everybody out. Says, okay, you're not sufficiently pro-life. I want to work with as many people as possible in order to convince as many people as possible of our position on this issue. I think the argument for addressing this at the federal level then it again goes to the root of what does it mean to be a human being? What does it mean to be a citizen of the United States? And what sort of rights do we insist upon being available to all citizens of the United States, regardless of the state that they live in? We fought some very hard battles within our country's history, and I would argue some necessary battles to say that, you know, you can't own another person. I don't care what state you live in, right? You can't deny basic fundamental human rights to a citizen. I don't care what state you live in. And really what this ultimately comes down to is we're saying that it's perfectly legal to deny life to somebody through the same process that pretty much all of us got here, right? It's not as if we're confused about how this happens. And we're going to have to come to grips with the fact that right now what abortion is the legal destruction of innocent human life. And at this point, it's the legal destruction of innocent human life for any reason whatsoever. And I think... on some sort of basic fundamental moral position, that is something that should be universal throughout the country, that we respect innocent human life and we will protect and we will defend it. And so I understand the argument for the federal, but to your point, there are a lot of people that said, again, this is about Roe v. Wade and this is fundamentally a state's issue and let's settle it there. But I would go back to many episodes in American history, we've decided that certain rights were originally left to the states. And I'm somebody that has always been in favor of limiting federal power as much as possible. But I do think that if you're a human being, if you're innocent human life, are we honestly comfortable with saying that in one state you can be killed for whatever reason presented up to month 9? And in another state, you can't be? Or do we think that this is something that is so fundamental to the fabric of what it means to be an American, what it means to just be a human being, that we believe that we should afford those protections and those rights wherever you are in the United States? And I side with the latter on that. I also understand that, you know, again, I understand the practicalities of politics. And this is why I tell my friends in the pro-life movement and my friends in the abolition movement, we have to do a lot more work in the culture before we can expect the sort of legislation that you want to see. Because ultimately, if you can't win the vote, then you don't get the bill. So,
right.
I mean, that's the practical reality.
But this is, and again, just so we're clear, I agree with you fundamentally. The number one job of any form of government is to protect its people. And so if you believe that it is a life, which you and I share this belief. I mean, if I look at this very logically, you either are alive or you're dead, right? Those are the only two options. And so if you are not, so when I argue with folks, and I'll say, let me ask you a question. Is a baby who is a fetus that is viable outside the womb, it can breathe on its own, is that alive or dead? And they say, well, it's obviously alive. And I say, okay, well, then by law, don't we have an obligation to protect it? And therefore, it is the government's right to protect it, whether it can speak for itself or not. I mean, we wouldn't act like this if somebody had some kind of physical or mental impairment. We would say this is ridiculous. It's the state, if you will, government's job to protect it. So why isn't it just because it's inside of a womb? So I'm with you on this. I just think that to your point that you were making at the end, the political reality is that it's not going to get solved, pro or con, without 60 votes in the Senate. And so right now, what is the best way to move forward and build a majority, build consensus, and build towards a world and a society where we have fewer and fewer abortions and more respect for life? And I guess that's kind of where I'm at right now.
No, I understand that. And look, we've had this debate in Virginia before, and right. I always let people know exactly where I stand. I can also look at the practicality of politics and what can you actually achieve right now. Here's what I would say. And I'm not suggesting it's a compromise position because I'm clearly never going to compromise on this issue. I don't believe you are either, but it's a question of how do we get from A to B? And here's what I would suggest for anybody that is going to take the position that it's purely a state's issue or it's too hot politically to be able to pick up and get everything we want right now. If you're going to make that argument, you have to show me a path that you're willing to go down in order to achieve that end state. And I think what happens right now and the reason why so many people in the pro-life movement are frustrated stems from this idea that it's always this idea that, well, not now. Well, we're not ready. Right. It's too hot an issue. It's going to cost us seats. And when you're talking about people who are passionate about defending innocent human life, they don't want to consistently hear that, well, it's just not time, especially from Republicans that they increasingly don't believe are serious, that they want to change this. And so I would say that if we're going to operate in good faith with one another, if we're going to make the argument that we got a lot more cultural work to do before we can get the legislative results that we want, well, then let's talk about what that cultural work looks like and what we're willing to do. Because I will tell you right now, there's a whole host of issues that we can work on right now on everything from educational choice to, I don't know, maybe not giving hundreds of billions of dollars in our state and federal budgets to institutions of higher education, which are not only indoctrinating our kids and you know, lobbying for federal college loans that they can't pay off, but also providing hospitals where they're actively encouraging abortion along with some other pretty heinous stuff to minors. These are things that we can actually start to work to push back. We should certainly be working on, we don't give a dime to Planned Parenthood.
Yes.
Period, the end. And so that's what I want. That's what someone like me wants to see. If you're telling me that we want to move in the same direction, but we want to bring the culture along with us, then let's look at some of these culturally shaping institutions, which are taking a lot of tax dollars and then using those to either indoctrinate our children or perform the very services that we're opposed to. And maybe if we can see some movement in those directions, we'll be able to operate in good faith. But I think that's necessary.
Well, not just that, but to your point, I look at the tax code in so many ways and say it does not support healthy families. It actually, in many cases, on the welfare system, encourage fatherless homes. It doesn't encourage the people who find themselves maybe, you know, with an unexpected pregnancy to say, hey, let's give it a shot because we can give you the support. And it's not just government. I think outside mm-hmm. help as well, the church and other organizations, making sure that we support people who choose life, who choose adoption and all these other things that can make life so precious and valuable. So I think to your point, it's not always the government solution, but it's how do we do things that actually encourage families as opposed to maybe discourage them?
Oh, I absolutely 100% agree. I really believe that not only this issue, but the entire country would, our country is in the shape it's in because families are in the shape they're
yes.
in.
Yes. Yep.
And if we actually, if we're actually moving back toward an issue where we, or a society where we appreciate the strength of a father and a mother being in the home, raising children within the bounds of marriage, we're gonna see a lot less push for some of these things within society that we don't want. We've conducted a kind of fourth wave feminist experiment for quite some time now, and it turns out men aren't happy, women aren't happy, and children aren't happy. I think maybe it's time to go back to what all of us intuitively know works, and that's when you have a loving father and mother in marriage, raising children. It's not only beneficial for economic reasons, it's not only beneficial for public safety reasons, it's immensely benefit for social reasons on the whole. And again, it's not that the government needs to come in and try to play some sort of role. In fact, a big reason why families have broken up so much in this country is because the government has come in and tried to replace the role of the father, tried to replace the role of the extended family, tried to replace the role of the church and other civic organizations or community organizations that used to provide that support. And so I couldn't agree more that, and the polling shows this, if you really want to have one of the single biggest impacts you can on abortion right now, raising a culture where we not only appreciate life, but where men see it as their personal responsibility to protect and provide for their wives and for their children, seeing in a situation where we hold up motherhood as something that is wonderful and absolutely critical to the well-being of society, as something that you do because, you know, you decided not to enter the workforce. I'll tell you what, one of the biggest pleasures, one of the biggest responsibilities, one of the things I'm most proud of in my life was being able to provide for my family so that when we did have children, my wife could choose to stay and help raise the children and educate our children. And look, it was difficult. We made financial sacrifices for that. But my oldest daughter is getting married in June. My son is graduating high school this year. My youngest daughter is 16. We have an excellent relationship with our children. I have a wonderful marriage with my wife. I can tell you right now, there is absolutely nothing that the world or the culture could have ever appeased or tempted or threatened me with that would have caused me to divert from the action that we took. And I want to get back to, again, men and women recognizing what an absolute gift it is to have a loving family and to create that. And for the people that grew up without it, I've talked to a lot of young men where they've told me, Nick, that all sounds great, but I didn't have any of that modeled for me. I don't have a legacy to protect. What I usually tell them is, no, you do. It's just going to start with you.
Right. Yeah. No, that's, and congratulations on that, because I think too often that's where we are these days, is that there's not a good example to be set. And I think your daughters have clearly seen something to model going forward, the relationship that you have with your wife and how you've treated them. Well, in case you forgot, Mother's and Father's Day is coming up. And if you're looking for a very meaningful, unique, and personal gift, have I got the answer for you. Text Spicer to 87204. You just text Spicer to 87204, and I'm going to introduce you to the folks at Paint Your Life. You can go to paintyourlife.com as well if you want to check this out. Here's the deal. You get a picture just like this. Now, this is me. I don't want to give you this one. I will if you really want it, but I have a feeling you've got your own. And this is what it ends up looking like. You take the picture. You send it to them. You can even send them multiple pictures and make a compilation. Maybe you want to get the whole family together and they can't get together, or you've got a pet that you want to insert. They can do all that. Once you send it to them, you choose your artist. You get to choose the artist that you think will do the best job. You get to choose the medium. So it's oil, acrylic, charcoal, watercolor. There's a ton of them. Then you choose the frame. You stay in touch with that artist as they develop the picture to your liking, guaranteed. It's up to you to approve it. They send you videos showing them doing the actual artwork. Like I said, until you approve. But this is going to be the most meaningful personal gift that you could possibly give. Now, if you've got brothers and sisters, you know your parents are going to want to hang it, right? So you will become the chosen one. Do this. This is going to make an unbelievable gift. And the best part about it, like I said, is you get to choose the type, the artist, they stay in touch with you, and you fully approve it. Best of all, right now you get 20% off. So text Spicer to 87204. Message and data rates may apply. Let me just ask one more question on this, because I do want to move on. Speaking of kids and family, I was a little taken back on this Trump stance by the reaction of both Mike Pence and the Susan B. Anthony list, who are both very pro-life, but talking about how they were really disappointed with President Trump and everything. And this goes to a point that you were just saying, which is why I wanted to ask you about it. It's like, I've been in politics for 30 years, okay? And I've heard every candidate talk about, and this gets exactly to what you're talking about, this progress, right? We got to fight for this. And we go to March for Lives on the National Mall and talk about overturning Roe and doing all this. We've had President Reagan, President George H.W. Bush, President George W. Bush, as far as Republicans who are pro-life. We got a lot of promises. It was President Trump who actually fought for life in a way that no one else had. In terms of the Supreme Court justices, the other federal judges, some of the issues that are important to the pro-life community, to the religious community, it's President Trump who did that. And I was a little taken back. I get that there is, you and I have just had the talked about the differences that people have had to his response. But it's like he's the guy that got us here. We wouldn't be even having this discussion about the steps forward to advance life if it wasn't for President Trump. If we didn't get the fight for those three Supreme Court justices, we would still be talking about repealing Roe versus Wade and the 60th anniversary of Roe being wrongly decided. Instead, we're celebrating like the third anniversary of it being decided in the right direction. And I don't know, maybe I'm just sensitive on this, but the reaction I think of Mike Pence and others was a little overblown, in my opinion, for a guy that actually got the job done.
I think for Mike Pence, there's some other factors that are influencing his response that are probably not isolated around this particular issue. I expect pro-life groups to stand strong by their position.
Right.
And look, here's what I'm going to say on this. I think it is perfectly appropriate for people that care passionately about this issue to be disappointed. I don't think it would be appropriate to then determine that all of a sudden President Trump is no longer our ally or no longer to be thanked or to demonstrate gratitude for the work that he did do. Now, again, the work for us has not ended and we're still going to continue. And I think a lot of us hope that his mind will change eventually.
But
also,
my view is, you know what? The guy's very clear about this, gets to the heart of what you and I are talking about. He's like, I got to get reelected. And right or wrong in terms of what he thinks politically, what's going to get him. If we don't get him back in the Oval Office, we know what Joe Biden's position is. And we know in 4 years, President Trump fought and delivered on life. I would rather take him right now for 4 more years. That's the choice we have. And so I go, okay, if this is what he needs to get back in the Oval Office politically, we know that he's got a track record of standing up for life.
No, and here's what I'm going to say. I don't think any of these groups are going to come out and now advocate for somebody
to
be president and whatnot. I think there's always going to be skepticism. Understand this, and I know you do understand this. It's the idea of having to accept this narrative, right? And I'm not arguing the truth of it right now. I'm just arguing the presence of the narrative, the content of the narrative, that we have to accept that babies are just going to have to die so we can get reelected. That's a really bitter pill to swallow. That's a horrible reality to consider. And I think there's righteous indignation at the state of society when something like that can be said and be believed to be true. And so again, I don't begrudge any organization to be frustrated by that. Again, we are going to be faced with a very binary choice come November, and it is going to be Donald Trump, the guy that did give us the Supreme Court that overturned Roe v. Wade, even though we wish he took a different position on some other things, right? And Joe Biden, the guy that believes we need to enshrine abortion up to the point of birth for any reason into law because this has become some sort of sacrament on the left. Yeah. That's an easy choice. And I think anybody who's pro-life needs to get out there and fight incredibly hard to make sure that Donald Trump gets elected rather than Joe Biden. And then again, we're going to continue to have these conversations. We're going to continue to have these, I think fights among allies, right? But that's what we need to remember.
Yes.
We need to not lose our gratitude for the things for which we agreed on and the things that he was able to accomplish. We need to understand that sometimes we see the nature of the fight differently and we disagree on strategy. That doesn't mean we disagree on ultimate outcome. And I think if we can keep that in mind, then we can work together in order to forge a path where, again, we get the sort of society that I think all of us want. And that's one that loves, respects, and protects innocent human life at all of its stages. And I would even argue, especially at the stage of its greatest innocence and most vulnerability.
Amen to that. You mentioned family. And last week, I think it was, or the week before, somewhere in there, the state of Florida, Ron DeSantis banned social media use for 13 and 14 year olds and said, you need parental consent at 15 and 16. In the Virginia legislature, is that something that is being talked at all about protecting Virginia's kids? And what do you think about what Florida is doing to protect its kids vis-a-vis social media? Obviously, not just as a legislator, but obviously as a parent that's been dealing with this.
I think when we're talking about children's access to social media, I think first and foremost, we need to remember that there is nothing the state can do that is going to subvert the initial responsibility, the primary responsibility, which lies with the parent. There's always going to be some mechanism by which they can access social media. And right. So parents have to parent. The state cannot do it for them. And oftentimes when the state tries to do it for them, we get some bad consequences. Having said that, I do believe that I have significant concerns about social media and the consumption of it by minors. Obviously, certain platforms are, I think, more dangerous than others, especially those owned by the Chinese Communist Party. But ultimately, here's what I'll say. I'm not saying that there's no role with respect to the government when it comes to determining what minors, you know, can and should have access to. I think we've done some very good work in Virginia and other places with respect to, you know, graphic sites and what they're able to do. And needing age verification before they can, you know, share what they're doing. So I want to be careful. I think some of the federal stuff we saw with TikTok gave the federal government far too much power with respect to defining what platforms looked like. And that can also be problematic. That can lead to mass censorship and too much government power. I think that Florida's bill was more narrowly tailored. And focus more with respect to the minor and ensuring parental permissions. And so I'm certainly more comfortable on the front where we talk about parental permission and ensuring that these companies that are going to provide access to their product make sure that parents are approving their child's access before that takes place. That I'm far more comfortable with. Because we do make a distinction between what adults can do and what children can do within society. And I don't think there's any question that while there can be many benefits to social media, there can also be a lot of negatives, a lot of downsides. And I think that's even more pronounced when we're talking about young children. And so making sure that we provide a mechanism whereby the parents have to be involved before a company can have an interaction with their child, I think can certainly be reasonable. We just need to be careful on how we do it so that we're not expanding government power to a degree where we're given more control and authority than we want.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of government anything, but I do think that the studies that continue to come out to show increased levels of depression, anxiety, suicide among young people in particular is concerning. And we do need to think about it. I get it. At the front line, it's a parent's job, but there's the way things are shaping out these days, you can't be there 24/7 to see everything that they're seeing. And at least if there were some protections, in the same way we don't give kids access to cigarettes or alcohol, there is a role, I think, of figuring out where that becomes until they become an adult.
Yeah, I'll tell you one of the things that was frustrating to me is in Virginia, I carried a bill where we were trying to address the problem of AI-generated pornography.
Okay.
And I got some pushback from people on that. I said, I want you to imagine someone taking a picture of your 16-year-old daughter, plugging it into one of these programs, and then generating very real-looking pornography in the form of pictures, in the form of video, and then spreading it around that school. And I want you to imagine, you know, the detrimental effects of that and the necessity of us being able to address it. And, you know, it died on a party line vote. I was just
party line shocked. Meaning Republicans with you and Democrats against.
Yes.
And what? Yeah. So you're a Democrat.
I think there might have been one Democrat that voted with me on that in the subcommittee. I think maybe one, but I have to go back and check.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, you go to these guys, and I assume that it's a little collegial down in Richmond, and you say, hey, what's wrong with the bill, or what can I do to fix it, or what's your objection? What do they say? Because you're literally, I don't, to me, again, this gets back to this, like, what are you, pro-born, pro-child? I mean, like, I don't get where some of the objections come from on the left in some of these instances.
Well, I think it's important to understand that the progressive left is actually in favor of what they call sex work. right? I'm not making that claim, although I think we're headed in that direction.
Well, I'm gonna say this.
I said this 3 years ago, and I had someone tell me that I was being crazy. I said within about 5 to 10 years, you're going to see more so-called experts and even some politicians starting to promote things that are going to get dangerously close or even cross the line over into pedophilia. We're first going to be told it's a preference that needs to be managed, and then we're going to be told that it's perfectly normal, and then we're going to be told we have to celebrate it, or we're horrible bigoted people. In which case, like I'm sorry, that's when I fight over. If you're looking for a line where I cross over and I fight, that's it. I think on this, the excuse that it's always used is, well, no, Nick, we agree with you, but it's a complex issue, and we need more studies in order to determine the best way to address it. You know, blah blah blah, and. Look, I'm not suggesting that in politics we don't deal with issues that are complex and might require some studying. I do think we draw some pretty clear lines when it comes to what a minor can be included in. And if we don't start getting out ahead of this right now, things are going to be created in a space shared, lives are going to be destroyed, and there's going to be no mechanism to punish that. And quite frankly, I think we need to make sure that people understand that this is something that we're not going to tolerate. We're not going to allow this sort of AI-generated stuff to be directed toward children. And quite frankly, when I listen to some legislators, some of these nice progressive tolerant legislators in other states talking about how, well, this is something that we need to provide for MAPS, which they refer to as minor attracted persons. The actual word for that is file. And again, you're already starting to see these conciliatory terms being used, and it's already being framed in such a way as to suggest that, well, this is just something they can't help, and it has to be managed, and we have to understand. No, I don't. I don't have to understand. I understand that it's evil, and I understand that it needs to be punished. And this ends up being another mechanism where eventually you're going to see people say, well, what's the harm if it's just AI generated? The harm is that it's once again promoting the exploitation and abuse of a minor. That's the problem. And that is exactly why we have, you know, that's the sort of thing that this should be really, really easy to put aside partisan differences and fight for. But unfortunately, that's not the case.
Again, I actually think you're right. This is just the slippery slope continues as far as what the left supports. I mean, the idea, I think back 10 years ago, if you told me then, hey, we'd allow biological males into women's bathrooms, I'd say you're nuts. That's stupid. If you told me that they could play in sport, I mean, again, I'd be like, this is silly. What do you like? Cut it out. And now, so I think that the left keeps figuring out how to push that envelope. And I think you'll be right. I want to ask you another issue that is interesting. There was a couple weeks ago on Super Tuesday, Jen Psaki and her friends on MSNBC were joking about exit polls in Virginia. And they were joking about immigration being an issue for voters when we went to the polls. And there was a mocked, well, what are they, border West Virginia? Ha 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 ha.
I mean, if you look at some of these exit polls, I mean, I live in Virginia. Immigration was the number one issue. Yes. Of course, I mean, again, these could change in Virginia.
Well, Virginia does have a border with West Virginia. Very, very contested area.
Build the wall.
You see this, you know, in Richmond in terms of, I'm sure you get briefed all the time, legislatively looking at ways to address both fentanyl, trafficking, crime, et cetera. Where does immigration stand in Virginia as a whole? Like, what is being done? How big of a problem has it become? And when I speak of that, I obviously mean illegal immigration. How much is it affecting the Commonwealth of Virginia?
It's a significant problem. We have an enormously high concentration of MS-13 in Virginia, especially around Northern Virginia. So this idea that it's something that they would laugh at, which is so typical, right? It's always the leftist elites, you know, laughing at us poor plebs because we just don't we understand we're not near the border? Hey, I got a question, Jen Psaki. How does Mayor Adams feel about illegal immigration right now? Right. He's further away from the border than Virginia. He seems to have some difficulties with respect to the way the border's being managed. Are you going to laugh at that? What about the mayor of Chicago? What about the mayor of Denver? See, again, it's just unbridled arrogance. And part of the reason, we saw this in Virginia this year where they were trying to pass laws. They're always trying to expand the ability for people that came to the country illegally to be able to participate, whether it be on, you know, county commissions, whether it be able to be serving as the chief of police for a local police department. These are all stuff that they tried to pass this year in Virginia that made it out of the House and Senate. And it's amazing because when we talk about people that are in the country illegally, their response is, the undocumented members of our community. Like, they always come up with these different
things. This gets back to your other example. It keeps pushing it. Undocumented members of our things, people who can't vote. Those are illegal. Like, they use the language
I sat there and I looked at it. I said, what's next? Like, oh, that person is aggressively amorous. You mean a rapist? Like, you know, they keep coming up with terms to try to obfuscate what's actually going on. And part of the reason why they want to remove this barrier between citizen and non-citizen, and part of the reason why they fight so hard to allow people that are in the country illegally to vote in local municipal elections, they want them to vote in county elections, is because they once again want to remove that barrier. I think there's a reason now why they want to try to offer more people in the country illegally to be able to serve in the military. This is part of a concerted effort. Now, Sean, here's what I'm going to tell you. I actually think in some respects, this very well could backfire on them. And I don't just mean because of citizens that are upset about this. I don't just mean because of people that immigrated correctly to the United States who are upset about people stepping in front of them in line. I also think they don't quite understand that while a lot of the people coming to the country might appreciate this notion that we're going to give you, you know, free stuff from the government, I think the narrative of the left loses very, very quickly when you tell that immigrant father or that immigrant mother, oh, and we're going to trans your kid in public school. Something tells me they're not going to be down with that. And so I really think the left has made a major miscalculation in some of the things that they're doing right now. And I do think it's going to backfire. But no, Virginians have every right to be, we have every right to be just as concerned about how badly Joe Biden has managed immigration and the border as the mayor of New York City, regardless of how close we are to the southern border.
Yeah. Yesterday, President Trump sued the judge in New York that is overseeing the hush money case. He sued Judge Merchant. And the if you read the media right now, it's Trump went after his daughter, right? That's the big thing. He attacked his daughter. So I started looking this thing up because I'm thinking, oh, come on, guy. Like, you can't go after the daughter. This is what Lauren Merchant, who she is. She has served as the president of Authentic Campaigns. This is from CNN, by the way. This isn't exactly right-wing propaganda. A firm that does digital campaign work and online fundraising, mobile messaging, web design. They work with Democratic candidates, including some of Trump's most outspoken opponents. Their website features a list of clients, which includes Biden and Harris's campaigns. Harris's campaign paid the firm more than $7.5 million. The firm's website also touts its work for Michigan Governor Whitmer, Katie Hobbs, Adam Schiff, who all have, not all, a lot of them have used ploys to talk about going after Trump. So Trump is saying, hey, look, I don't think you're going to be fair because your daughter is making money running campaigns saying, I need to go to jail. I need to be. He's just pointing out a fact. That's not attacking his daughter. It'd be one thing to, like, those are facts. And you read the statement that Trump has done. He's not attacking her. He's pointing out, hey, you're ruling on me, Judge Merchant. You're a Democrat. She's a Democratic political operative that is raising money and using her clients to attack me about going to jail, which is what you would be ruling on.
Oh, I'm sure if Kellyanne Conway's dad was presiding over the Hunter Biden tax trial, I'm sure Hunter Biden's lawyers would have no problem with that whatsoever. I mean, I'm sure they would think, oh, no, that's just perfectly fine. No, again, what's going on here? The left is conjuring up an image. What's the image? Oh, we attacked the judge's daughter. And so automatically what you're thinking is of some little girl with pigtails on the side of the street selling lemonade. Like, why would Trump attack her? How horrible. No, his daughter is a very, very active political operative who specializes in helping candidates that are going after President Trump, advocating for him. And again, they have completely weaponized the DOJ against Trump. They've weaponized pretty much every level of the judicial system to try to go after him. To like this ruling with respect to the real estate, there was no victim. There was no victim. They just wanted to try to bankrupt
him. But here's the deal. This is the best part. The New York Times, like on cue, the New York Times comes to the rescue. This is, it says, the New York Times profiles the no-nonsense, drama-adverse judge. Although Justice Merchant is a registered Democrat, people know him, describe the judge as a moderate law and order prosecutor. Two people close to the judge who spoke on the condition of anonymity said that the judge has privately expressed pain over the attacks on his daughter. But the people said that those attacks will not compromise his ability to oversee the case. I was like, oh my God, it literally was on cue.
No, it, well, and of course it is. But here's the deal. Nobody cares anymore. Like this idea that the legacy, like headlines for the, you know what I use headlines in the legacy media for? Content. Criticizing the legacy media.
And That's right.
Their inability. Their complete inability to read the situation or to even provide anything resembling objective journalism. Because again, so we've talked about a couple of different ways that the left will either manipulate language or try to inject imagery that bears no resemblance to what's actually going on. It's the same thing with journalism. They want to use the moniker of objective journalism to then engage in editorialism.
Right.
And nobody buys it anymore. This is one of the single greatest frustrations of the left right now is that they have co-opted so many of these institutions that used to have a great deal of value and credibility with Americans. And they've repeatedly used them to push an agenda under the guise of objectivity. We're awake to it now and they keep doing it. And now we're like, yeah, we don't care.
I know.
Well, then we're just going to do it harder. Yeah, we care even less. Well, now we'll do it even harder. You know what? Now I went from not caring. Now I'm pissed and I'm literally going to do or believe the opposite of what you say because you have demonstrated so many times that you are not objective. You are in on the rig, right? And you are going to continue to do this. And so this is what frustrates them. They're like, but he's under indictment. But this article came out. But the New York Times and his poll numbers will continue to go up.
I know.
Because at this point, we know what you are. You're the opposition. You're the opposition. You hate us. You don't just hate Trump. You hate all of us.
That's right.
And you know what? We don't really like you either at this point.
That's right. It's mutual. Nick Freitas, I always appreciate your voice. I love your videos. If you guys aren't subscribing to Nick on YouTube and on Instagram, go to it makes my morning. I don't even drink coffee and I like watching you drink coffee. Nick, thanks for being with us once again. I appreciate it.
Thank you. My pleasure. Take care, Sean.
All right, guys, continue to subscribe. Hit that YouTube, Rumble, Spotify, Apple Podcast link so you never miss an episode. We'll see you back here tomorrow on the Sean Spicer Show.